Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to episode number 41, being recorded on the 27th of August, 2014, with special guest Rama Ramani. My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague Evan and our special guest Rama. Guys, please introduce yourselves.
Hey, folks. This is Evan Vasilik, and I'm a senior support escalation engineer in the Windows team supporting Windows Azure IaaS.
Hi, guys. My name is Rama Ramani. I am part of the Azure CAT team. CAT is Customer Advisory Team. So we work with large customers solving big problems on Azure.
Excellent. Right. And you've been doing this for a while, right, in that role, Rama?
Yeah, I've been in the team for about 5 years now. So the team used to be called SQL CAT, Customer Advisory Team. And then since Azure, we are now called Azure CAT. We're part of Azure Engineering. And then I've been in Microsoft for about 9 years now. So I used to be a feature PM before I joined CAT.
Excellent. Yeah, and Rama, I mean, just a sign of the times, right? Prior to when you got, it used to be there was SQL CAT, and then I forget what the other half was. There was another half of CAT, and then you guys merged, and it became Azure CAT.
That's right. I think there used to be BizTalk CAT as part of Connected Systems Division, and then we came together as part of SQL under RGM Mark Sousa.
Yeah. Yeah, and now you guys you report straight up through the Azure org, right? You're actually considered Azure, not data.
That's right.
Or
I mean,
not anything else. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We always used to be part of engineering, but right now we are part of Azure Core Engineering. So.
Okay. Cool.
Yep. Now, the reason why we even came to know of Rama in his recent role over here is he and some other folks at Microsoft published a very nice white paper, which we'll put a link to in the show notes, of course. We may have referred to it in a previous podcast, but the white paper is something that's very relevant to what customers may be doing these days, which is upgrading their Azure applications that have SQL Azure in them. And how do you upgrade apps that use SQL Azure and at the same time minimize any disruption to the application, downtime, etc. So, Rama, why don't you, I believe you said you had a particular scenario or customer scenario that instigated this particular white paper?
Yeah, that's right. Firstly, thanks for having me here. So the paper, like they said, when we work with customers, we get to know some of the challenges and take the common ones and build out for the community. In this particular case, this was a customer, a CSV, who's actually building out an app, and it's actually multi-tenanted. And they have this need where they do have a DR location, and they need to pass and do rolling upgrades to the application, and they want to ensure that they can leverage their DR investments, but make sure that they do have availability of the application to their end users with limited functionality, but it is still available. And once they finish the DR site, then they want to turn back all the traffic to DR and then bring it back and do for the primary site. This notion of applying and leveraging a DR location is common even in the on-premises world, but when you take it to Azure, there are some gotchas, as we know, any cloud platform, let alone Azure, because it runs on commodity hardware. There's dependency, it's actually a shared environment, and some of those things were the actual motivation to actually write up this particular guidance. And the way we sort of approached it is to sort of lay out the problem and then say how people, and then apply it to just one service, which is SQL Azure, but then look at some stage to extend it across a whole set of tiers.
Okay, go ahead, Evan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so Rama, just to make sure I understand, because I come from a SQL background originally, and SQL Azure is, Azure SQL Database, right?
Yep.
We got to get our terminology right these days, is really near and dear to my heart. So you're talking, because there's kind of two patterns we see out there, right? We see the DR scenario where you have kind of a production and a DR, and the two are lightly coupled. But then we've got the other big scenario where somebody has, you know, hundreds or thousands of databases. For this particular scenario, you're talking a small number of databases DR scenario, not the massively distributed
scenario. That's correct. Okay. You're right. Yep.
Okay. I mean, the same concepts would apply, but there are some quirks to when you get that, you know, when you get a large number of sharded databases that you're not going to cover in this particular scenario.
You're spot on. We actually kept sharding out of this whole thing, and we referred to, because the problem is complex in itself, and we just didn't want to add the other next layer of it. But these are all natural extension points once you have a set of methodology in place.
And just right. to understand the my dumb way of doing it would have been to take down the database, take a total outage, upgrade everything, and bring it back up, right? And we want to avoid something like that. Is that
That's the way we sort of we approached it is we called it minimal disruption. Mm-hmm. And then if you almost look at disruption in quotes is because people can define it in the right manner that they want. And in some cases, what you said could be the right approach depending on what the change is, what the downtime is going to be, and what the specific SLA is, right? And sometimes taking that small downtime, maybe a few minutes, making the change to the database and bring it up online could be much more simpler than doing a bunch of other operations. So if you look at almost the first section of the paper, we sort of lay out what are all the approaches that somebody could do. And the first one being the obvious, right? Not every change requires you to have any kind of downtime. That could be as simple an online upgrade that you could be to, right, to the database. It could be as simple as adding new stored procs or a particular stored procs, some business logic changed. You can just apply it right away, and then, you know, it could just be a blip.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the next thing is where you know that the downtime could be significant, and the significant I put again within quotations is a few hours, and somebody says, few hours is not a big deal for me. If I have to go change the schema, if I got to go build out new set of business logic, I need to do a whole set of things. But now I know that it's down. I know that I can just put a front. We see this all the time, saying that a banking application, right? You go there and say that this site is not available, mm-hmm. and you just come back after an hour, and then it's available. It might well be okay, and that's the approach that you take. But in our case, this specific customer was willing to actually change to a read-only database scenario, saying that all users can go read stuff because there is not a very online transactional system. So they do have writes obviously happening in the system, but they do also want to make sure that they can function with a limited functionality, and that was called as minimal disruption to them. I know that this is not generic. And I heard feedback where people come back and say, you know what, making something as read-only is massively disruptive. And I agree with what they are referring to and what we are sort of used to. But this is the underlying assumption that we have going forward. And when we spoke to a set of customers, they said, you know what, this is better than actually taking it down. And that's actually needed for their SLA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really key point, Rama, because, you know, we kind of come from those of us that are coming from the on-premises world originally, right? We've all seen servers that have been up for a year and mm-hmm. it's missing patches, it's missing upgrades, there's all kinds of challenges with it because the customer said, I refuse to take a single minute of true downtime.
Correct.
Right? If they had come into this scenario and said, you know what, I'm willing to get reduced functionality, that seems like a really good trade-off to allow yourself to get new features, new functionality, you know, whatever, to be partially functional for a little while versus, you know, you go years with no changes.
Yep.
Right. So, I can certainly see it. But it is a mindset change.
Yes. And I think for the class of application, it could be a social app. Think about the Facebooks of the world, right? So you can still live with reading some of the just the read-only data. So the way we sort of said after defining the problem and the approaches is to sort of say, hey, what are the various factors that somebody should sort of consider to actually say, what should I apply and how should I sort of use it? And we just laid out four of them, right? And people could have more, but it almost sort of sets the platform for a kind of decision matrix, if you may. And obviously, the first thing was an RTO. So you want to make sure that what is the duration taken by the upgrade to come back with full functionality, and what is the whole how long am I going to remain in a read-only state, which is probably very critical.
Just for our listeners, RTO is recovery time objective. Is that what you're referring
to? Yep. Okay. Yep.
Go ahead. Thank you.
The second thing that we wanted to sort of consider was, what is my availability during the upgrade process itself? So if you have just, let's say, a primary and one replica, then obviously if you're going to take down one and do redirect traffic to just the replica and apply on the primary, then you don't have availability at that particular stage. But people might still say that, you know what, I'm okay with it. But that's actually a factor for consideration. The third consideration that we had was, let's say something goes wrong during the process, how can you actually roll back? And can you actually get back to the clean state and start all over again? And that's another important factor for consideration. And finally, many important cost is one of the big considerations. So the cost could be, do you need a specialized queue? And I'll get into details of why this is relevant for Azure SQL database as well. And the other cost could also be for temporary deployments that you might sort of leverage.
Okay.
Then the way we sort of, I mean, if you have any questions, feel free to jump in. If not, I'll just go through the paper.
I think it makes sense. At a high level, let's just go through the steps that you outlined in the paper.
Yep. So broadly, we went into, hey, let's now look at a bunch of topologies. And we actually first started with multiple regions and then single region. The reason even single region is popular is because a lot of, especially in the CSV's world, I think you even asked this particular question, that you are considering large number of databases and they don't want to go with multi-region because, it adds cogs, which means that the way they position their SaaS application sort of becomes higher. So they do have a single region deployment. So, and when they actually want to do this, they may have to create a temporary / staging environment, and that's what the approach takes. So we separate out at a broad scenario between multiple regions and single region. Then within multiple regions, we sort of say that, okay, active geo-replication, for people who don't know, is a feature in Azure SQL database where you can actually go create multiple replicas for your Azure SQL database. And this could be in different geolocations, and you get asynchronous replication that happens as part of the platform. And then you get this way that now you have GeoDR or geo-disaster recovery in place. If one region goes down, then you have the mechanism to turn the other replica into a primary and take control.
And, this is read-only, or is this read, or is, I'm sorry, wait a minute, let me ask this right. Can I read the data from the back end, from the GeoDR scenario? Because that's a feature that we'd always talked about when I was still supporting it, but it didn't exist.
Yep. So I think the scenario for GeoDR is where the replica or active geo-replication is that the replica is available in read-only mode. And, go ahead.
So everybody is talking to just one database, right, at that point?
Yeah.
All regions are talking to the one database.
That's right. So if you have, let's say, two web roles, right, and two deployments of web role instances in two different regions, and they're pointing to the primary, and they could be writing everything to the primary, and behind the covers, the primary could be active geo-replication is sending that to a set of Azure SQL databases in different regions.
Got it. Okay.
So the first model that we said is, hey, how can you actually, if you have two sites, and we call them as site A and site B, because primary and DR and some things can require those sites to be swapped. So we just call them as site A and site B. And then what we essentially want to do is to actually use we say that the databases are set up in active geo-replication mode. So you have, let's say that in US West, you have a web role deployed. It's talking to an Azure SQL database in US West. And then the Azure SQL database is actually having its replica in US East, and which is also having a web role deployment. So you have a traffic manager on top, and then traffic is sort of redirected, is sending to both places. This could be in load balanced, or it could be in failover mode. And then people can come in and they get access, but everybody is writing to the primary database, and the secondary could be used for reads. When you essentially want to use active geo-replication, in this approach, what you would do is you'd actually go and create two additional replicas for the database, right? One in site A and one in site B. And the reason you do this is because you, when you want to pull them off and when you want to do your upgrades, you still want to make sure that there are going to be two other copies of this database so that people can still be servicing and for their read operations. Then, until that completes, which means it gets seeded and then data gets copied, you don't have to worry. Everything is happening normally in your production system. The next step you do is when you know that they are all caught up. So when I say they are caught up is now instead of having one primary and one replica, you have one primary and three replicas. Is that clear?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Then you go in and say that, hey, you know what? Now that everything has been caught up, I'm going to create a temporary staging application deployment and staging slot. So as you know, the cloud services gives you a production slot and a staging slot. So this could be your web role deployment or worker role, whatever you need, and you just deploy them in the staging slot. So even when you do this particular step, there is actually no disruption to your production. Everything is running as well. When you then create the staging slots, you can actually set the connection string in the staging slots to point to the new replicas that you actually created. So the staging slots, nobody is seeing the staging slots at this stage. Nobody is seeing the databases that are the replicas at this stage, but they're all hooked up correctly and there has been no disruption until this particular point.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one of the really cool things about staging. Right, is you can do all your regression testing, your functional testing, whatever you want to do against technically what is a production database without actually having to impact customers.
Yep. Correct.
Yeah. So okay.
Yep. Makes sense. So once you've set all this up, so this is when you actually go in and you say that I want to turn my system to read only. When you do it to read only, obviously, everything has been synchronized until this point, so that might be a window where writes have happened and before the read-only is applied. So you just have to wait till these have trickled in to all your secondaries. And there are APIs to make sure that the secondaries have actually caught up and are synchronized. Once you know, and it should happen fairly quickly because all the seed, you never had to disrupt the system until a bunch of, until the replicas were created. And you would also pick a particular time slot when you expect your app to be in lesson usage, very similar to how you do it in on-premises world or in any system. Once you have done that, the system gets to read only. Now you can actually, you terminate the newly established secondary relationship with the primary. So you actually go and do a planned termination of active geo-replication to the newly established secondaries. So what does this mean? This means that in the staging slot, you have a database, you have site A, and in the staging slot, you have a deployment and a database in site B. Both are sort of disjoint and are actually copies of the primary. And the primary has one relationship with another database. Right? This is the situation right now.
Got it.
Are you with me?
Yep.
Okay. Now you do this cool thing called a VIP swap, which is actually a virtual IP swap. And what this gives you is it moves what you had in staging to production for the cloud service deployment. Once you do it in both sites, what you've essentially done is now all users are essentially going to see only the temporary deployment that was actually created and to the copies of the databases and which we created as part of active geo-replication.
So okay. Your staging now becomes production.
Exactly.
And your production is hidden now from customers.
Correct. And now when I refer to staging, I'm referring to the older thing which was called as production, right?
Yeah.
And that's why my paper has pictures, so hopefully that's a little easy to follow through. And the other thing to note here is the two deployments in the staging slot are in two sites are referring to databases which still are maintaining the active geo-replication relationship. Right? Because we never broke the relationship between the first replica. We only created two more, and then we broke that relationship, and we disjoined them.
Got it.
Now, what this lets us do is, if you upgrade the database on the primary, right, automatically those writes are getting trickled to the secondary. And that's the cool thing that you get because of active geo replication. So now let's say that, and now nobody is seeing it because that's what we created the whole layer on top to make sure that nobody can see it. And the BIP swap makes sure that the staging slots are not seen. If the staging slots are not seen, then those were not going, they are actually a shield to the database itself.
So, okay. So let me back up then just 1 second. So, cause I think I missed it when you were first talking about it, is part of the key to this is the fact that you actually use the active geo replication to kind of build your replicas, but then you actually unjoin them from that so that you could then go mess with your production database and still point your what used to be staging, but is now your production code to those unjoined replicas.
Correct. So,
You kind of took advantage of that to make your copy.
Exactly.
Make sure you didn't have to manage it. You didn't really have to manage the fact that, you didn't have to say, okay, at this time I don't want any more transactions come through. You just disjoin them and everything flows through that's prior to that disjoin, but anything after that doesn't happen.
That's because the system being in read only.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's also important that we started with one replica which maintained the geo replication, and that relationship was maintained. And because that was maintained, all my changes to one, the primary, will create to the one to the secondary, right?
Yep.
To one replica. After that is done, I do a BIP swap again, which means that now my two production slots have the new version of the database, and then you can, before you do the BIP swap, you actually also make sure that the application gets upgraded, right? Because if there's any application code which refers to the database, you make that change, and then you turn the system back into read-write mode after your QA testing, and then you can go ahead and delete all your temporary artifacts. Right. Yeah. So this became the best way of reducing that window and making sure that you get the best experience using active geo replication. And then the subsequent topologies are essentially referring to some cases where you're willing to make some kind of trade off.
Okay.
And next pattern, what it talks about is what actually one of the customers preferred. They said, hey, I don't want to use ultimate, create new replicas. And this is where the cost model comes into picture. Anytime somebody thinks about active geo replication, it's tied to the premium SKU of Azure SQL database, which comes at a higher price. And because it gives the functionality, because it's premium, you get dedicated resources, so people get all that. But then this customer actually wanted to do the whole process. They wanted to upgrade site A and site B in isolation, and they were okay with not having a DR during the upgrade process. So in this scenario, you would do everything that I said previously, but you would not create new replicas. You would redirect your traffic manager to point to your site A, which means now it leaves your site B at your own discretion to do what you want. And you can actually go in and you can break the active geo-replication relationship. You turn the system to read-only, and which means that now the two places are in sync. And then you go and upgrade site B because it's completely in your control. Nobody is seeing it. There is no need for new staging slots, etc. And then you go and you actually flip all your traffic to site B, which is now the new version of the application. The system is still in read-only mode. And then you can actually go and set up a new geo-DR relationship, which means you go create the new version of the database in site A. And it obviously takes a little bit more time, but then you understand that you're willing to pay that cost because now you don't have to create new replicas and manage them.
So doing all that, so, I mean, this sounds like some really great ways to, you know, maximize your benefit while minimizing your risk, depending on your cost.
Correct.
Willingness to pay cost. But, you know, actually managing this sounds fairly complicated. I mean, this is the kind of thing that somebody could misclick or do it in the wrong order. I mean, how did you guys actually manage the actual operations of doing this? I mean, did you guys PowerShell everything, or, you know, or did you just kind of, you know, trial and error the steps on, you know, test deployments and everything, and then just say, you know, very prescriptive, these are the steps you do in this order? How did you manage that part?
Yeah. So this particular customer, this is actually a large, it's actually a smaller part of their larger rollout. They also have to go do a bunch of changes in Azure Storage, and everything was done via PowerShell. And we actually had the PowerShell scripts to actually, and ActiveGeo replication gives you ways of actually doing planned termination, and there are PowerShell commandlets specifically for that. So we leverage all that was provided as part of the platform, but the whole, as you said, the whole workflow logic was sort of scripted in PowerShell.
Yeah, but that's great though, right? Because that's where people make mistakes. You know, people get tired, they misclick.
Yep.
And you know, having all this as APIs that you can call is really the, I mean, that's the icing on the cake for this scenario.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and even the cloud service, creating a staging slot and moving around, all that can be done via PowerShell.
Well, Rama, this is really great. Thank you so much for giving us that overview. I mean, I know I understood it, so I'm sure my listeners got it as well.
He's at MCS. You know, if it gets through to MCS, you know, we're all good.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks. Yeah, I will put the white paper on the link to the in the show notes so listeners can get the details. All right?
Yeah. I think one just quick thing is, in a couple of weeks, I should have an update to this paper, because we now support two other scenarios. Now that standard SKU also supports, you don't have to have premium SKU for ActiveGeo replication. That's already GA. So I'm going to be adding two more scenarios to this white paper as well.
That's great.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, please let us know, and we'll put it in the show notes at that time as well.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
Great. Thanks a lot, Rama.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rama.
Bye. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.